And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, nature, sustainability, interconnectedness, relationships, astrology, and life itself. We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sitarani Palomar.
2012, a new year, and what a year it is. The end of the current and the beginning of a new Mayan calendar, a presidential election year, the Occupy movement that started in late 2011, hopefully to be continued and blooming all over the world this spring, and a farm bill that will define once again how we here in the United States grow and produce our food. It's a monumental year with many moments of significant potential transformation for us as a society. What can we expect? How can we be best part of this work and life personally and collectively? 2012, the stars of stars and minds, the title of this show, as we are speaking with two leaders in their own fields, in this case, astrology and sociology.
You've got a little bit of mind.
Sociology. All that and more today on An Organic Conversation, Mark.
Well, yes, you know, it's great. It's a new year. And, you know, this year in particular, for some reason for me, it really feels like a time of letting go and being open to what is possible in the world. I just have this feeling that there's just so much available to us. And I'm just so excited to see what that is.
Allowing the new. Yes.
Yeah. Sita. Well, and new in ourselves, or what was existing in ourselves. We were talking before the show. Helge said that really we're starting to feel like there is no alternative to us as an individual. And we're finally recognizing, I think, in this time, and this is what this year is going to be defined by, it's that we can't rely on one person to make the change for us. We have to be the change we want to see.
Yes.
Yeah. And but of course, before we get into the rest of the show, here are the green headlines with Jen Lloyd.
Thank you, Mark. Nigerian oil spill has been contained. Officials at Shell Oil say that the worst Nigerian offshore oil spill in over a decade has been fully contained before reaching land. The spill originated from a flexible line used to fill tankers and covered about 350 square miles in the Bonga oil field. It was discovered on December 20th. Favorable conditions helped the cleanup efforts, which also expanded to include a second unrelated spill discovered in the Nigerian Delta. The EPA introduces new restrictions on toxic pollutants. In a move that industry experts are calling a massive victory for public health, the EPA has unveiled new legislation that will limit power plant emissions and toxic pollutants such as mercury in the country's air, water, and food supply. The agency estimates that the new rules will prevent 11,000 premature deaths and 130,000 cases of asthma annually, as well as saving the country up to $90 billion per year in healthcare costs. Power plants have gone unregulated for a long time, while other industries have been forced to cut emissions. The EPA has issued assurances that the regulations will not result in a loss of jobs. And the Keystone XL pipeline's future is still in question. The fate of the highly controversial and much-debated Keystone XL pipeline may finally be decided as Congress has introduced legislation to force President Obama to make a decision on the permit by late February. The president delayed the pipeline's construction last month to the relief of many activists, but a rider on the new payroll tax bill will require him to decide whether the pipeline's construction is in the national interest sooner than he had originally anticipated. And those are the green headlines. Back to you, Helge.
Thanks so much, Jen Lloyd, with that weekly update of what's going on here locally, nationally, and internationally in the world of ecology and sustainability. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And we'll take a quick break, but stay tuned for our first interview about this brand new year, 2012. We have some fantastic guests lined up for you only here on An Organic Conversation. That and more when we come back right after the break.
Weep, little lion man, you're not as brave as you were at the start. Rate yourself and rape yourself. Take all the courage you have left.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
Today's show is about 2012, all the things that will be happening and our relationship to them. Many key decisions will be made this year. It's a presidential election year, and we have seen a movement of the people in this country and around the world that started in 2011 that has the power to transform what we have accepted as the norm, perhaps for far too long. The hunger for true and fair democracy is apparent around the globe, from Egypt to New York. Why now, and what is our relationship to all of this? Are we going to vote? Do we believe things can and will actually change to the better for all of mankind if we demand it, if we ask for it? What will this year bring? How are the stars aligning, literally? What is the power of our faith, and with it, what is the power of our thoughts? 2012 of Stars and Minds, today on An Organic Conversation, as we are looking at relationships once again, in this case, to the wisdom of the stars and the power of the mind. With us now, calling in from Cabin John, Maryland, is astrologer, activist, and our beloved reoccurring guest. It's an annual tradition to start the first show of the year off with her, the one and only Caroline Casey. Caroline, welcome to the show. Great to have you with us.
Thank you so much. Yes, I am your agent just outside, upriver from Washington, D.C.
And yes, a new year, the new dawning. How were your holidays? Were you in cahoots brewing new things for this year, or are you actually allowing yourself with all your travels and teachings to take some days off?
Well, both, all the time. But for all of us, you know, as we lay the old year to rest, you know, I gave my pretty darn good winter solstice talk just a block away from the Capitol. But we want to, you know, what are we taking with us, the good and the bad from 2011? I love how, you know, the gods, the divine, are trying to present everything to us as though it were a tarot card. So on one level, 2011 went out with a harmless tarot card bang, which was the Japanese super car crash on December 4th, which was adorable. Nobody was hurt, but it was a super car crash of cars totaling $3 million. It was 13 sports cars, a Lamborghini and 8 Ferraris and a Nissan Skyline and 3 Mercedes and a Toyota Prius in a pear tree. That was the only car that could drive away. But we go, oh, it's the 1% car crash. It's kind of perfect. We go, yes, that's going nowhere. And then simultaneously, my favorite word that I learned in 2011 is graxing, and it's a biological term that, according to Rupert Sheldrake, describes the action of individual bacteria or slime mold or humans, anything coming together as an intelligent community to address a challenge that cannot be resolved alone.
So what's that word?
Arab Spring to American autumn to Occupy Everywhere, that we are in a period of global graxing, and we know simultaneously we're in apocalypse fest, you know, in myriad dire and happy face versions of, you know, simple certainty imposed on complexity as the poor Mayan calendar. Oh, God. But bless its heart, it is the end of the long count one cycle of the Mayan calendar. They have dates that go 4 million years into the future, so it's not, you know, so everybody settle down. But we use everything in a playful way. But it's like, let's put standards of merry discernment to guide us to navigate the rising tide of goodness and craziness. There are some nutty predictions and presumptions and hubristic assumptions flapping around out there in the cultural wind. So we just say, whatever makes us passive is toxic, and whatever makes us active and engaged is tonic, you know, more intimate with life.
So, Caroline, before we get into tonic and toxic, you know, 2011, there seemed to be a lot of significance in there. Can you tell us about where we're coming from and where that's leading and where that was leading us?
Yeah, well, we're taking with us the ongoing let us not forget, let everybody get off Ambien, you know, and remember the ongoing Gulf ecocide, the ongoing Fukushima meltdown, the similar meltdown in Hanford cleanup where it could bubble into the water supply, the upcoming tar sands pipeline hanging in the balance. And so what we do, the war on children, the war on women, the war on, you know, I mean, all of that, the war on intimacy. So those things are with us. But where we kind of come alive, yeah, when you say about the holidays, the holy days, some things, always good, you know, but what's unique about now? So in the sky story, you know, right over the winter solstice and Christmas, regardless of anybody's, you know, dedicated faiths, but the gods use everything, you know, Japanese car crash. But on Christmas Eve, there was a new moon, new cycle. We go, okay, we like that. On Christmas Day, December 25th, Jupiter, so beautiful at night right now. Ooh, it's so beautiful presiding. Jupiter represents the power of storytelling. And on Christmas Day, it stationed, meaning it looked like it stood still in the sky and then went forward. It had been retrograde, which is kind of backwards, went forward on Christmas Day, you know, meaning it is the, you know, it is the birth of the guiding earth wisdom story in everyone's heart, available to all for kind of psychic download. And as it moves forward now, it's guiding us. So the power of storytelling, you know, you know, there are many things. The unifying story of the earth, you know, dissolves false boundaries. And I love this phrase that tyrants don't care if they're hated as long as people don't love each other. And we might say tyrants don't care if they're hated as long as people don't love the earth. So it's this unifying love of earth born at the end of 11, you know, into 2012, which on January 23rd will be Chinese New Year dragon year, going, whoa-ho, so let's ride that dragon. And that's one of the models of, you know, everything alive and animated, including the power of stories. So what story do we want to ride? And it behooves our team, you know, to realize how powerful we are and what we carry with us in our magic backpack. So, yes, critique, yes, we want critique, you know, here, look, it's terrible in detail. And then diagnosis, and I like putting the hyphen in diagnosis, dia-gnosis, critique and diagnosis, bringing all wisdom to bear, and then the blessing, and then the dynamism.
And yes, unification. We are talking with Caroline Casey, astrologer activist, calling in from Maryland, Cabin John, with us as an ongoing annual tradition of the first show of the year dedicated to your work, Caroline.
Caroline, you were just talking about story in terms of Jupiter and the stories that brought us here. And science, story, and metaphor are all coming together as one. They're all unifying. And we know that we look back and science and astronomy were once the same thing. So can you talk about what that means and how that plays into this upcoming monumental year of 2012?
Well, the better our metaphors, the better our science. You know, it's again, the we are socially and individually, you know, assigned the task of reuniting, wedding all false estrangements, you know, brokered by the reality police as a mean trick whereby to keep people obedient to, you know, empire, which is, or colonialism, which is going down. And so, yeah, physics, metaphysics, love each other. You know, so many people go, oh, I come from the heart, you know, never mind mind. And we go, no, that's silly. The mind and the heart love each other. You know, Venus, Mars, masculine, feminine, physics, metaphysics, astronomy, astrology. You know, as physics says, there's meaning in patterns, the argument is over. You know, there's meaning in patterns. And what we're going, you know, the meta story, we say, you know, when in one of your backstage questions, is it fragmented? And we go, well, it's not an isolated crisis, but a crisis of isolation everywhere. We want the unifying story. And that's what's so good bubbling up in this intelligence of the Occupy movement everywhere. So many articulate beings, you know, reinventing ingenuity and indigenuity. So what's going down is the old empire colonialism model of dominate. You know, and what's coming up is a humble willingness to collaborate with everything. You know, and it is time for humans to, you know, feel on one level very small in the big mystery, kind of like Chinese landscape painting, where it's big nature, and then way down in the valley is a little human with a wheelbarrow, you know, going, ooh. And, you know, cooperators are standing by, that this model of, you know, from dominance into, you know, magic simply means a willingness to collaborate with everything. And do you guys and Gaias know the Paul Stamets' story about the slime mold?
The great mushroom expert. No, why don't you tell it?
Well, briefly, I'll make it short because it's so great, and everybody can tell this story to anybody they're, you know, standing in a checkout line with. So Japanese scientists took slime mold that had already graxed, that had come together as a community, and they set it through a maze. And at the exits, they put oat flakes, which apparently slime mold's just crazy about. So the slime mold went down the dead ends and eventually wended their way to the exits. Okay. So the next day, next generation of slime molds, they set it through the maze, and they made no wrong turns. They're like, no, directly to the exit. So Japanese engineers, looking over their shoulders, had a formidable task of redesigning the Tokyo subway system, Tokyo, to many, many suburbs. And they thought, so they designed a maze, and they put oat flakes on Tokyo and oat flakes on all the little suburbs that needed to be connected, and they set the slime mold through the maze, and the slime mold went, oat flakes, must find oat flakes, and they did, and then the slime mold shut down the inefficient pathways, and the Japanese engineers used that as the grid, as the design grid for the Tokyo subway, and we go, oh, that is so cool. So are we intelligent enough to cooperate with the design ingenuity of slime mold? And we go, yes, we are. You know, so, you know, again, what's going down, you know, and it's perfect that we humans, you know, cannot solve all these horrific, you know, irreverent rudenesses we've inflicted on the planet by ourselves. It's by ourselves that got us into this pickle.
Yes.
So, again, cooperating with the ingenuity, this call and response that we've set, you know, forces in motion so disruptive and dangerous that a signal goes out from creation that activates our mythological DNA. And here comes my favorite dedication, the trickster redeemer within us and without.
Yes, and staying in humbleness to that, or maybe even better, in awe to all the things we don't even know that we don't know yet. Just like the Japanese painting. I love that. With us still on the phone is Caroline Casey, activist astrologer, calling in from Cabin John, Maryland today, our special guest on the show. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And we'll take a quick break. Caroline, please stay with us. We want to look at 2012, what we can expect with you in a moment when we come back. We'll take a quick break. Stay tuned. Break up to science in an act of pure defiance, I broke her heart. As I pulled apart her theories, as I watched her grow and weary, I pulled her apart. My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Hi, I'm Paul Piscopo, executive chef at the new signature restaurant, The W San Francisco, Trace. It's our farm-to-urban table concept, which means all of our ingredients are locally sourced, sustainable, and traceable back to their natural origins, ensuring a dedication to socially responsible cuisine. We look forward to seeing you soon at Trace. For reservations, visit trace-sf.com. That's trace-sf.com. Or call 415-817-7836.
Bowman College has been offering professional training in nutrition and the culinary arts since 1989. Natural chefs will learn to master a healthful approach to classic culinary techniques, while nutrition consultants become experts in client consultation and the promotion of individualized plans for optimal health. Bowman College, a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. To find out more, visit bowmancollege.org. That's BAUMAN college.org.
And we're back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
Today's show is about 2012. Calling in from Cabin John, Maryland, is astrologer, activist, and our beloved reoccurring guest, Caroline Casey. Caroline, 2012. We are coming from 2011, where it's about unification, awareness, the awe of in relationship to ecology and nature, finding our place really in all this. What is so significant about 2012? Well, why does it feel like it's a really big year?
Well, cooperators are standing by. Aside from the Apocalypse Fest and its myriad forms of usefulness and spiritual colonialism, and we compost all that. But yes, election. What are we? We're always voting for reality, and so we do want to compost our harumphitude and disappointment, as you know, into composting for rich nutrient for animating the desirable story. And I like turning to the sacred teachings of the Dog Whisperer. If you just substitute dog politician for dog, it really works. We are the politician whisperer. We go no, you know. So rather than being distracted into the ridiculous part of the election, we go no. What? Let's describe the job that we're hiring. You know, and the Dog Whisperer is, I don't know if you know his work, but it's really great on leadership. But we are calm and assertive. When you are angry, says the Dog Whisperer, angry or frustrated, you abdicate your leadership. So he says, you never correct a dog when you're upset, you know, and so we never correct a politician when we're upset. We are calm, dynamic. No, not that. We discourage that, but we encourage this. No, not tar sands pipeline, but this, more green economy, jobs over here, you know, with our team coming in to animate that desirable. And, you know, so we have Chinese New Year on January 23rd, new moon, Chinese New Year, year of the dragon, woohoo! It's a water dragon year. We can ride this thing. It is also the day when Mars, general woofiness, stations and retrogrades until April 13th. The traditional thought is that when Mars is retrograde, the aggressor always loses. It's an Aikido moment. So we go, aggressor always loses. We'll play with that. But to redefine Mars, the energetic direction of culture, redefine what heroism is. Mars will be in Virgo, which is the wise medicine man or the wise medicine woman. The power of words is crucial and playful. So, you know, we're not demanding, we're invoking and creating, because demanding is still kind of infantile, unworked out issues with daddy. But we go, no, we are. You know, it's like the tired street chant. You know, what do we want? Peace. When do we want it? Now. If you just change one word, what are we creating? Peace. When are we creating it? Now. Then we're in the juju moment. Then we've inhaled our authority. We are the dog, politician, whisperer, calm and assertive. You know, so that's part of our dynamic. The year started off again to our advantage, should we choose to accept it, with Saturn, authority, leadership, trining, 120 degree angle to Neptune, power of symbols and dreams. So if we, you know, and images and the music to bring the desirable guiding myth alive. And there's metaphors for each degree of the zodiac, and it's very witty. The image for Saturn as we began this year that guides us through the year is, men strain to escape a dark pit, a woman calmly lowers a rope. Now, you know, in a dream or a fairy tale or a myth, we get to be all the players, regardless of our temporary age, race, and gender assignment. But it's a very witty image, going, oh, toiling men escaping dark pit, and a woman calmly going, would this be useful to you? Here's a rope. There you go. There you go, boys. Climb on.
Love it.
So we're rising above, you know, that's right. And it trines Neptune, and Neptune's image is, it's the same degree as where it was in Egypt in the Arab Spring, butterfly emerging from chrysalis into a beautiful transformed world. So we go, men escaping dark pit, woman calmly lowers a rope, beautiful transformed world, let's go with that. That is one story. We maintain, you know, our critical edge and our sharp standards of playful discernment. You know, we always know the trickster part of us that arises in our hearts even more, the trickster redeemer. You know, is it's like nature, you know, some seeds in nature only sprout after cataclysm. So as we've said before, but let's say it again, you know, by analogy, and everything is by nature analogy, you know, some parts of ourselves only come alive, you know, after like,
Yes, and you're referring to the story of the redwood tree, I assume, among many other examples, where the seed of the redwood tree only germinates after a fire. It does not. It will lay dormant for tens of years if there's no forest fire. So the suppression of transformation actually, or fire, causes the forest to die, as transformation is part of life. What I loved about your other story was that image of we are hiring our president. I love that. That it's not, he's not, he or she is not elected. We are basically hiring the lead administrator of this country, and that feels really empowering. And also, it doesn't give up the power or the solution to one being. With this election year, and I was in Washington, there was a certain sense of hope for the last 4 years that this one man, however great his work in the last 4 years has been, or disappointing to some, the moment we put our power onto somebody else's shoulders and let that person run with it, we will set ourselves up for failure. It's our power, right?
It's one of the great ironies. I mean, I do a lot of, you know, Coyote Network News, my mythological campaign coverage service. And when I deal with straight news guys, I mean, it's the straight news guys who are kind of the superstitious sportscasters. You know, who's going to win? And we go, no, it falls to the part of us, the augurs, the diviners, to go, forget that. That's a distraction. And if we really believed in prediction, we couldn't have a democracy. What are we hiring? And we go back to the power of, you know, what are we, you know, what is now call for?
Yes.
And we go back to words. You know, the wonderful word inaugurate comes from the word augur, which means the diviner in each one of us, who would walk out into nature and observe nature's patterns, and nature would reveal by patterns who the most responsible human leader steward would be, and then they would be inaugurated. So we go, let's bring that back. That's what we're doing. We're going, you know, we're just one of, you know, several billion species, diminishing though they are, on the planet. So we are voting on behalf of what we love. We are voting on behalf of the wolves. And this war, symbolic war on intimacy, you know, humans co-evolved with wolves for such a long time, and our treaties are terribly broken, but humans learned an enormous amount about actual family values and actual leadership from wolves. You know, the wolf leader is picked because of their capacity to engage the playful ingenuity of the pack. We go, that's what we're doing. You know, who can say, here's the experiment before us, team, and this is the unifying story, and this is what we're doing. You know, whoever tells the most enticing, invitational story, you know, wins, and we're hiring them to do that. And, you know, and also, so what does it mean that we're hunting wolves? We're hunting leadership. We're killing leadership. I love also just the customs are all once had meaning of bringing, you know, a fir tree into the house at solstice time. Wonderful tree expert Diana Beresford Kroger said, walk into an evergreen forest, you will always come out smarter because of the aerosols in the air. Like, so we're bringing, you know, the trees in, and the potential destruction of the northern arboreal forest with tar sands pipeline, one of the ugliest and most ridiculous and horrific and stupid experiments going. And we would be then, again, a war on intelligence if we're destroying what makes us intelligent. The other thing, you know, again, I had a great guy on the radio show I do, Visionary Activist Show, Clint Werner has a great book out called Marijuana, Gateway to Health, you know, in which he's taken all completely credible, backed-up medical stuff. It's all footnoted. But just to remind us, we humans in every organ of our body have cannabinoid receptors in our brain, every organ. And our body can manufacture cannabinoid, but it loves the phyto, the plant cannabinoid, in its myriad forms of, you know, antiviral, anti-tumor, antibacterial, anti-dementia. And Clint in the radio show was saying, oh, and it improves memory. And I go, wait a minute, Clint, I can hardly remember my next question. What do you mean improves memory? And he said, you know, a puff a day keeps dementia away. You might forget where you put your car keys, but you won't forget what they're for. I'm like, all right, you know, let's go for that. So what does it mean that we've criminalized intimacy? Once again, you know, that we have a natural alliance with these plants. These are exemplars, but it reminds us of everything, you know. And again, back to that collaborative domain. So Chinese New Year, we get to ride in on a water dragon. Mars retrogrades, which means it's also excellent for repealing, reviewing, redefining, sucking the chi out of that which is up to no good. And I would invite us, a willingness to cooperate with everything, that we envision, again, powerful visioning. Let's envision the ancestors and Obama's mother and a council of wise wolves, you know, surrounding Obama and putting a protective, guiding cloak of earth wisdom around his shoulders, you know, going, let's do that backstage. You know, again, we apply for everything. And Uranus the trickster will be trining his Mercury, so we could see him come alive again. I know, you know, forget birther. You know, some of us are part of the DNAer movement going, we just want a DNA sample to make sure it's the same guy. But it is that model of going, all right, work with everything. And the default setting for everybody we're dealing with, you know, ever, is to see each person connected to their own wise, guiding autonomy, just as a practice default setting.
Beautiful. That would have been my next question, which I did not forget to say, what is up for us as individuals, but knowing your own guiding wisdom, that's beautiful and the most critical part of life and of any democracy and of any relationships. If you don't exist yourself, then you can't be in relationship with something else.
Yes, and we're also, you know, the Scheherazade, great trickster redeemer, her name means city redeemer. Her sister Dunyazade means world redeemer. This is from the 1001 Nights fairy tale story. By her power of storytelling, she not only liberates the land and women, but liberates even the tyrant who has murdered his own heart. And when she gets married at the end of that, she is wearing a dress embroidered with all of the plants and animals of this planet. You know, leadership must wed the earth again. All of the myths are guiding us to that. And it's part of the dynamic of, you know, there's finite games and infinite games, finite game about winning, infinite game about keeping everything in play. So there's also finite stories and infinite stories. We want to take our small story, personal or, you know, social, and connect it to a big guiding story, you know, that the cooperators are indeed standing by, you know, what is the most, we offer ourselves to that. And even if we don't know the specific remedy at a circumstance, for a circumstance, we're invited to call in, you know, whatever is best for everyone involved, come on in.
Yes.
And it's that model of, you know, we're allowed to invite, you know, the Venus model is, you know, Venus, art, beauty, intimacy, that we invite in what is needed.
Caroline Casey, astrologer, activist. Caroline, if people wanted to hear your show, we're almost out of time, but tell us how people can find you if they're not already in awe of you.
CoyoteNetworkNews.com will bring you to radio and how you can listen live and how you can listen to archives and how you can have astrology readings and how you can join Trickster Council for metaphoric agility. And anything like that. So
CoyoteNetworkNews.com. Wonderful. Yeah. We wish you the best and lots of kahooting for 2012. And of course, we'll have you back. Good luck with your show. May we all reach as many people with this message. And may we be heard and may we all come together.
Exactly. We're not going viral, we're going spiral.
Caroline Casey, thank you for joining us today and Happy New Year.
Yep, yep,
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And it's so beautiful. It's we could ask one question or two questions and then actually kind of leave the studio because her wisdom, it's beautiful. It's in flow. It's true. It's one of those truths that when you hear it, you know it's true. At least that's my experience, Mark.
Well, not only do you feel like it's true, but the what I just felt so completely in today's conversation with Caroline is the beauty of invitation.
Yes,
and we get to invite into our lives what we really want.
Her words, I want to take up residency in my heart. You know, I want to sit with them in silence because they keep exploding like a firework that has multiple levels to it. It's just truth and love and empowerment and Unification, gorgeous.
Yes, on today's show here on An Organic Conversation, it's all about 2012, the things that will be happening and our relationship to them, which gets us to the second part of our hour together today, the first show of the year, with a wonderful guest, Frances Moir-LaPay, who just wrote a book, EcoMind, Changing the Way We Think to Create the World We Want. But before we get into that interview, here is, of course, our weekly update with the world of fruits and flavors, Mark Mukahi with What's in Season.
So what's in season? And on the line from the market, we've got Earl Herrick from the San Francisco Produce Market. Earl, what the heck's going on out there?
Hey, Happy New Year, Mark.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Earl.
Hey, what's going on? Tell us what's happening.
Well, the market was pretty quiet this morning. Everybody's buying rhythms get all disrupted during these holidays. Everybody doubles up because of the holiday closure, and then in the coming days, everybody's slow because everybody got doubled up.
Well, so hopefully, when they're done being doubled up, what are they going to be looking for? You know, what's the gem out there this week?
Well, you know, citrus is all over the place, and you can find grapefruits and mandarins and navels, but you know, the Valencia is really the topic of the day because we're at a perfect transition from an old California crop that is low acid and high sugar to the Mexican fruit that is high acid and low sugar, as is the case with every emerging citrus. So, you know, right now is the time you want to grab the last of the California Valencias to savor that really deep, rich OJ. Now, you know, you can be an educated consumer and ask your retailer for them, and if you're unable to find them, mix some Mineolas with the Valencias you do have, and that'll create a really high character juice.
Well, and you know what, Earl? So I really love that you wanted to talk about Valencias today, because you and I also have had that experience where you drink one glass of juice one week when you're at a restaurant, and then the next week it's completely different. So thank you for bringing that up. That's awesome.
Sure, man.
And we look forward to having you on the show next week.
Hey, always good to hear from you, Mark.
All right. Take care, Earl.
Happy New Year.
Thanks, Earl.
Yes.
So, Valencias. So what Earl's saying is talking about, and if you are an orange juice lover or an orange lover, you'll really want to pay attention to this what's in season, because with the changing of seasons, if you like sweet juice, you'll really want to ask your retailer for California navels, because otherwise you're going to buy, Valencias, because otherwise you're going to buy a Valencia orange and you're going to get a sour juice, and it will really surprise you. And so if you notice the price of Valencia oranges going down at your retailer this week, it could be because they're switching over to a Mexican Valencia. And so look for California Valencia oranges wherever you are in the country. It's about the last week or so that you're going to find them. And good quality Valencia oranges should be firm and heavy for their size. Now, they've got a thinner skin than navels, so they're harder to peel, but you don't necessarily have to peel them if you're going to juice them. You can just cut them in half. And if you are going to juice them, you want to make sure you take them out of the fridge and warm them up, because normally they can last on your counter for about a week, but when they have so much sugar, you're probably going to want to store them in the refrigerator because they would mold quickly. So pull them out of the fridge, let them warm up to room temperature, and then roll them. Take your hand and actually roll them on the counter. That breaks up the membranes and actually will allow you to get more juice out of your orange. And lastly, on Valencia oranges, we've had a little bit warmer weather than normal this winter around the country. And Valencia oranges will actually start to re-green. They'll actually start to have green on the top of their skin. That's not an unripe orange. It's just that they started to gain more chlorophyll from the leaves around them. And so don't be afraid of that. You just want to make sure that they're bright and plump and heavy for their size. And go out there and get some California Valencias. And, you will not regret making the choice. And if you do get them, quick little thing that you can take home is 1 to 4 medium oranges equals about a cup of juice. And that's a serving of fruit. So you just by drinking that fresh orange juice, you'll get a serving of fruit this time. That's what's in season.
Wonderful. Naval oranges.
Valencia oranges.
What do I think of navels right now?
They're in season two.
Oh, see. Thank you, Mark, for that weekly update of the best produce that you can find right now nationwide, really, right?
Yeah.
He's the produce whisperer. You know, she was talking about the dog whisperer policy. You're the produce whisperer. I love it.
Talk to the melon. Thank you, Mark. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And today's show is all about 2012. We heard from Caroline Casey in the first half of the hour about how the stars are aligning for this year, literally. And now we are looking at our relationship to all of it. Francis Moore-Lapay, our next guest here on the show, the author of EcoMind, a brand new book, Changing the Way We Think to Create the World We Want. But before we start that interview, we'll take a quick break. Stay tuned for more. Take my heart and walk me in to the children of old Iran. Take my hand and walk.
Frey Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frey never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frey organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frey Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at freywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
There is nothing more restorative than garden-fresh food cooked with skill and served with love. Bowman College has been promoting well-being for more than 20 years by teaching people to cook and eat for health. Launch your career as a nutrition consultant or natural chef and learn to nourish yourself and your loved ones. I'm Ed Bowman, founder and president of Bowman College, Holistic Nutrition and Culinary Arts. Check us out at bowmancollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N, college.org.
Trace, the new signature restaurant at the W San Francisco, is committed to creating an enriching and thoughtful culinary experience. By fusing the vibrant local personality of the Bay Area with a dedication to socially responsible food, Trace ensures all the ingredients are traceable back to their natural origins, locally sourced and sustainable. For reservations, visit trace-sf.com, T-R-A-C-E-S-F.com, or call 415-817-7836.
Do you feel run down, stressed, overweight, or overloaded? Urban Remedy is a delicious 100% organic juice cleansing program designed to jumpstart your body's natural healing and cleansing abilities. This delicious juice feast, created by leading acupuncturist Nika Pasquale, is rich in vital nutrients, minerals, and enzymes, providing you with all the nutritional nourishment you need to thrive. Delivered directly to your doorstep. Urban Remedy, a convenient way to boost your energy and balance your body. Place your order today at urbanremedy.com. That's urbanremedy.com.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Today's show is about 2012, all the things that will be or may be happening and our relationship to them. We know now how the stars are aligning for us this year, and now we will learn how our mind and our relationship to what is happening may change the outcome. With us now, Francis Moore-Lapay, the author of 18 books, including the well-known Diet for a Small Planet, and the receiver of over a dozen honorable doctorates. Francis, are you with us?
I am. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today. It's a new year. It's a new year show, the first of the year. We had Caroline Casey on the first half hour of the show telling us about how this is really the time of unification, of finding the inner voice, being part of that network of ecology, of relationships in every aspect of life, because denying it would not be true to what is. And I love that you were able to take this topic of you know, all these movements that are occurring and no longer make it about us and them, us and the other. It's really about feeling the power, actually. It's totally empowering of how one, once you come from your own self place and the way you look at things, sees the world of opportunities. How did this book come about, and what motivated you? Because you've been in the trenches for many, many, many years.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, this book is a very personal journey for me because somewhat over 3 years ago, I was in a conference with a lot of my heroes speaking and great information coming from the podium. And I, instead of feeling empowered and fired up, I felt overwhelmed and just loaded down. And I left thinking, oh my goodness, you know, if others are feeling this way. And also, I should add that the audience sort of dwindled over the days of this conference. And I just thought, oh my gosh, there has to be a better way for us to think about the challenge and a better way to present it and talk about it to ourselves. And so I began a journey that first was a draft that I shared with others. And so it, in a sense, this is a crowdsourced book, because I got a lot of feedback via my website about, oh, the equivalent of about 80 single space pages from readers of that early attempt. But it really was a very personal struggle for myself. How do I reframe the challenge in a way that is, that makes my heart, you know, sing, that makes me see the possibility? And that was really what led to EcoMind.
And so there are, you're discussing seven thought traps. And what are those traps, and what do we fall into? And I agree, when you are in any movement, but we're both, you know, working in the social and the food movement, all of us here in the studio too, it can be very disempowering to hear how great the challenge is and how much separation exists between us and the other, when in fact, you know, we have this beautiful quote that if we had bought the stock of a certain biotechnology company 10 years ago when, or 15 years ago when we started working against that company, we would be owning it. And maybe owning is not the solution. But that said, how could we work with the other to transform it to something mutually better, right? That's really the notion. So in this work, what you're describing, the thought traps, how does that work?
Well, let me add to what I opened with, to say that, of course, I wanted to articulate something for myself and others that was grounded in the evidence and not just my own wishful thinking. So it's very evidence-based through this book. Well, the thought traps, some of them are messages of quite a number of environmentalists. Others are simply ideas that are out there in the atmosphere, so to speak, that I think are disempowering. So the seven are a mix. But the first three are a cluster around the idea that our growth economy has hit the limits of a finite planet and that we greedy consumers are to blame. I tease these out into three separate chapters. But and that is in contrast, let me just say, the big picture of this book is to move away from the quantitative notion of we've hit the limits, which is absurd, I argue, even from the point of view that, in fact, we're wasting more than we're using of what we generate. So how can we say we've hit any limit? But the real shift I'm asking myself to make is the shift from a frame of limits, a quantitative frame of hitting the limits of what the Earth can provide, to a frame of alignment with what we know about human nature. We now know so much more with new anthropology and archaeology and neuroscience. So how do we align with human nature, and how do we align with nature? And so the theme of the book really is that as we align, there's more than enough for all of us to live well, that the scarcity we see and the destruction that we see is created by us. It is not the scarcity is not the product of a limited earth, but it is our malalignment.
Because of the imbalance, yes.
It's all about imbalance.
Yes.
And so that operates from the most personal level to the global level, and that is really the theme here. I point out, for example, in the opening of the book, that this idea that growth is the problem, I counter that with the statistics from scientists telling us that we waste from 55 to 87% of energy in the U.S. Close to, you know, over 40% of our food is wasted, and on and on. So that what characterizes our economy is really waste and destruction, because it is so malaligned with our nature and with nature.
Yeah, even that term waste doesn't exist in nature, right? There's a function for everything, and I don't know who came up with that word waste. It was certainly humans. If that word doesn't exist, we would call it resource mismanagement.
Right,
and
exactly.
With that, yes.
Yes, I was in the Omega Institute here in a beautiful, beautiful learning center in New York, and they've created a living machine that processes all of their water, their quote-unquote wastewater. And I think it's, if I can remember the numbers, it's 25,000 gallons a day are processed through these living plants. And returned within 36 hours. They're microorganisms and various things. But it's all a natural system. And returned within 36 hours to the groundwater. And so they encouraged us to just drop the term wastewater. There should be no such thing.
Yes, and we're talking to Francis Morlapé here in Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
I'm MC Tirani Palomar.
Francis Morlapé is, of course, the author of Diet for a Small Planet and 17 other books, and also with her brand new book now on the show, EcoMind, Changing the Way We Think to Create the World We Want.
And, you know, Francis, I've been doing this for a long time, as you have, and what I've been finding lately is people will want me to join their team and say that this is wrong and this is wrong and this is wrong. And I found that instead of trying to argue or convince, I'm just asking what makes that so. And then it's now changing the conversation, because often we will get caught up in what we think is true, and yet we haven't fully thought it through, and we fall into those traps that you're talking about.
That's beautiful. That's excellent. Yeah, I mean, one of the subtext, I guess, of this book is that shift from the blame game to the mutual accountability.
So true.
You know, I say somewhere in the book, I say that if we're all connected, if all is connected, then we're all implicated as well. And so we can never just point fingers, because since everything is connected, then we are implicated in whatever we don't like that is going on. We share some responsibility, even if that responsibility is just that we failed to speak out when we might have.
Yes, so true.
I love that comment, and that was something we were talking about before the show even started, when we were looking at 2012 and say, what makes 2012 different? This is the year of responsibility. And as individuals, we are looking for ways to rise to the occasion. And since you were talking about those thought traps, I'm curious, what kind of suggestions do you have for how we get started and becoming more responsible?
Well,
watching our thoughts.
My theme is, it's somewhat a different language, but I think it very connects with yours, is the theme of empowerment, that my abiding trust based on what I know of human evolution is that, you know, we did not evolve to be couch potatoes and whiners and finger pointers. That, you know?
So true. Yes.
That, how could we have gotten here, right?
Yeah, no way. No.
Good question.
But how do you turn it around? What do you suggest?
Let me just conclude that. So I then conclude that the fundamental problem, and it's reflected in the global pandemic of depression, is that most of us feel powerless, and that is anti-human. That our need to make a dent, that is what the term that my mentor, Eric Fromm, a brilliant social philosopher who died in the 70s, I believe, But he that was the term he used, that this deep need to not just be acted upon, but to be an actor. Mm-hmm. And that, so I often, when I hear the word responsibility, excuse me if I'm offending in any way, but I feel a little bit of the finger pointing of you need to be responsible. And so I'm trying to, in my own writing and thinking and with myself, how do I, you know, remove whatever it is that is blocking people from that natural desire to make a difference and to make a difference in a good way, to know that we are actually contributing to something beyond ourselves.
Yes.
And so it's kind of removing the thought traps is an attempt to remove some of the obstacles that keep people feeling guilty or stuck or powerless, and opening them to their own power. So throughout the book, I give examples. The direct answer to your question is I give examples of people who are feeling empowered, and whether they be, you know, I tell one of my favorite stories is the woman in Germany who, after Chernobyl, decided that nuclear power was not the way that her country should go, and instead of, you know, she might have done many things, but she decided to start her own renewable energy cooperative and create and bought out the local grid. She got so many people with her, she bought the local grid and now has a cooperative of renewable energy that serves, I believe, 100,000 people, something like that. And now Germany itself has turned away from nuclear, and Siemens, one of the big nuclear companies, is now also rejecting nuclear. But there are so many examples of people just responding immediately, in her case, immediately to something that was offensive to her, this terrible tragedy in Chernobyl, and deciding, okay, what can I do right where I am now?
Yes, change attracts.
Well, and I think that I like your flip on the language there about responsibility is in response to something. It isn't so much implying the active participation. And when we are actively participating, we are creating something. And that's what we need to do right now is create solutions, be empowered and create.
Collaborate.
And so I think the more that we can share stories, I know you would agree that we are social mimics, that we are constantly shaping ourselves by others around us. And so those stories, and I'm sure that, you know, that's one of your goals is to really, and even in your ads, I have to say I've been on many radio shows, but I've never enjoyed the ads so much.
Thank you.
That's the feedback we are getting. Yes, even the ads can be beautiful.
They're all examples, right? They're all examples of whether it's an organic winery or, you know, some other example. It's people who said, okay, I don't have to do it the way others are.
Yes.
And I can find a way to align my needs to have an income with my values.
Yes.
And it's beautiful.
Certainly. Thank you, Frances Morlapé. Thank you for making the time for joining us today. I know you are on book tour with your new book, EcoMind, Changing the Way We Think to Create the World We Want. All that is on your website. Where can people find you and your work?
Smallplanet.org. And I work with my daughter, which is a great blessing. And she's also an author. And her most recent book is Diet for a Hot Planet.
Yes. Nice. Oh, I can't wait to pick that up.
Smallplanet.org. Frances Morlapé, happy new year to you. Thanks for that important book and your important work. And we'll have you back soon.
Thank you.
Such a pleasure. Thank you, Frances.
Thank you, Frances. So that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thanks for listening.
An Organic Conversation is a production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producers, Kristen Ponger. Studio engineer, Robert Costa. Production assistant, Lauren Mulcahy.
If you missed parts of this show or for any other episode, go to iTunes or anorganicconversation.com.
We are your hosts, Helge Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sita Rani Palomar.
And we will be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then.
Bye-bye.
Am I really? The lights will draw you in the dark.